Blog Talk Radio.
And here we are. This week, Bernie Schwartz has died. His children include Jamie Lee Curtis. Yes, that's right. That was his real name. The stock market just had its best September in decades. Believe it or not, that actually means something for those of us who don't invest in stocks. And to no one's great surprise, White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel is to run for mayor of Chicago. He has high hopes, but not everyone knows that Rahm can knock a hole in the dam of Chicago politics. When New York candidate for governor, one New York candidate for governor, Palladino, when he said to a reporter, "I'll take you out," he apparently wasn't expressing confidence that he could get the reporter to date him. And there's a chance that this thug could become the chief executive of the state of New York. And speaking of Republican candidates, Meg Whitman, seeking California's governorship, has said that employers should be responsible if they hire illegal workers. Guess who hired an illegal alien as her maid? Guess whose former maid is now charging she was exploited and financially abused? If you guessed Meg Whitman, give yourself 10 points. We'd have given 20, but it was really too easy. New jobless claims were down for the third time in 4 weeks. You can expect the unemployment rate to go up over the next 2 weeks at some point. But for now, three of the last 4 weeks, it's gone down. The TARP program, for which $700 billion was appropriated, will now cost about $650 billion less. It helped prevent a major depression and was a joint effort of the Bush and Obama administrations, and Democrats and Republicans refused to take credit for its success. We'll talk about why. What may happen? That's about 193 trillion kilometers away from the Earth. That, by the way, is about 124 trillion miles. And that planet might support Earth-like life, for example, us, because it's in the right zone, neither too hot nor too cold, relative to its star or sun. If scientists are right, maybe we'll end up there after we've spoiled this planet. At that distance, however, it would take just over 20 years traveling at the speed of light to get there. In other words, 20 light years. Anybody remember the speed of light? We'll come back. Another story is that Jimmy Carter has been released from the hospital. He was admitted after suffering an upset stomach on a flight to Cleveland. I might have the same reaction, but I suspect he's blaming Ted Kennedy or the Israelis. And finally, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. So 20 years traveling at that distance, that's why that's 12.4 trillion miles. That's probably wrong. It's 124 trillion miles. In recall news, product recall, 200,000 Beemers and Rolls-Royces have been recalled due to a problem with power brakes. And Fisher-Price, the toy maker, has recalled 2.8 million of what they call play areas. It seems that within those play areas, there was a risk with the inflatable, round, bouncing objects getting caught in babies' throats. Now, to their credit, Fisher-Price decided they didn't want to take a chance on infants choking on their balls. Mr. and Mrs. America, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, this week in history, and our guest, Rick Penn, who will be speaking about politics. This week, unlike last week, you get to hear two people mostly agree with each other, but it should be fun anyway. First, we want to invite you to a site that can tell you some things about insurance. It's mostly for people in Arizona, but you might find it interesting anyway. The website is, all one word, insuranceandmoreaz.blogspot.com. It's written by a farmer's insurance agent who shall remain anonymous, but I take pride in it. Anyway, the noise you heard in the background is our producer, Autumn Bushman, growling for the microphone without any prompting whatsoever. The only time she ever growls is during the show. So if you didn't hear that, I'm glad. But if you did, that's what that was. Talking about those stories we headlined, quite seriously, the stock market has gone up this month that we're ending tonight, September 30th, more than it has in any September in about 30 years. And the reason I suggest that really matters to those of us who don't have investments in the stock market is that traditionally the stock market is a very good predictor of what the economy is going to do several months out. So the fact that September was a very good month suggests that the economy is going to be doing substantially better. Is that a guarantee? Obviously, nothing ever is. So don't bet any serious money on it. But the fact is that this is a good sign, along with what we were talking about in terms of new jobless claims. That is, people who are filing for unemployment for the first time, that number went down for the third time in 4 weeks, suggesting not so much that all kinds of new jobs are being created, although that's also happening, but it does suggest that fewer companies are laying people off. And that obviously is a good thing, especially if you're one of those people who otherwise might have been. I mentioned that the unemployment rate would be likely to, not unemployment rate, I beg your pardon, well, although that may also happen, the unemployment rate and new jobless claims might go up over the next couple of weeks. Here's why. You have a couple of factors. One, the unemployment rate, keep in mind, is the number of people who are actively in the job market who can't get jobs. And the reason that the new jobless claims is likely to go up is because we are not enjoying a robust economy yet. We are out of the recession, technically, but the unemployment rate is still high, again, as is normal as you recover from a recession. But because we're not in a robust, very strong economy, new jobless claims will go up and down for an appreciable period. And by the way, to tell you how stupid I am, when I said up and down, my hand went up and down, just so the rest of you could see that. Anyway, so that will obviously fluctuate like everything else, but this will fluctuate in very short waves because of the fact that we're not fully producing yet. The time when the economy is strong enough for unemployment to continue to go down, new jobless claims to continue to go down, is when factories and providers of service are nearing full production. We're nowhere near that for obvious reasons. I mentioned the unemployment rate is likely to go up as well. Here's the reason for that. News gets through the economy. Obviously, not everybody listens to the news. Not everybody listens to this show. We certainly know that. But not everybody listens to any news or reads any news. Most of us who do involve ourselves in the news think everybody knows everything that's going on because it's on TV and radio and the newspapers, on the Internet, and so forth. Reality. Reality is that many, many people, I would suspect most, do not expose themselves to news. Well, they may, but they don't expose themselves to news at all. And so they know very little about what's going on. This is why so many people believe nonsense that's fed to them rather than being informed. President Obama's a Muslim, or he's a Christian who sat around a racist church, or who knows what this week. I actually had somebody say to me this afternoon that he expects that after the November election, President Obama will be indicted because presumably he's a Muslim. Okay, I don't pretend to understand that. But anyway, people are not necessarily listening to the news, but some are, and even those who don't hear from their friends about people starting to hire. So what happens is that more people who have previously been discouraged come into the job market seeking work because they're now actively seeking work. They are part of that large mass of people who are doing so. And if they can't find work, then they're marked as unemployed, and that increases the percentage of unemployed. So don't be surprised as a result of new jobless claims being down if the unemployment rate goes up a little bit over the next couple of weeks. It is logical and likely that it would happen. We mentioned the TARP program. And that was the Troubled Assets Recovery Program. I'm not sure. But in any event, $700 billion was to be spent on that. And it was assumed from the beginning that that was spending that would never be repaid. And it was just going to be not so much a question of whether a gift or a loan or whatever, but that it would be unlikely to be recovered. Well, it turns out that because of the program that was initiated today for the company, one of the companies that was bailed out, a big one, AIG, a plan was developed today for them to repay, and it's apparently fully within their capacity based on what they are now producing in terms of dollars. And what's occurring as a result of all this is that the very greatest amount of cost that the TARP program will eventually be is not $700 billion, but $50 billion. Now, $50 billion is a lot of money, but it's like 7% of $700 billion. So here's where you get in that connection. What it means is that, first off, you saved all these companies, you saved General Motors, you saved a lot of jobs, and it cost $50 billion. At the risk of a harsh reminder, the stimulus program, which has been saving jobs, cost a lot more than that. So the TARP program was a good deal for the United States. And by the way, it's entirely possible that the government, rather than spending even the $50 billion, may make a profit on this. So this horrible idea, how dare we bail these companies out? Why don't they go bankrupt like other companies? Well, it turns out to have been a good investment, and it turns out to have helped prevent a major depression. Just a little thing like a depression. Not bad. And by the way, that's not something where the Obama administration gets all the credit. George Bush and Hank Paulson, Bush's Treasury Secretary, were heavily involved in the creation of this, and they deserve a lot of credit, too. So it's not just one party or the other. But no one's taking credit for this, and the reason they're not is because out there in the populace, the ignorance on the subject is so broad that they're afraid to say, we were in favor of TARP, and it saved jobs and is going to make the government money, because all these people are opposed to bailing out these companies because of all of the nonsense spewed by the likes of Sean Hannity, Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, all these, or was that Bimbo? No, I guess not. All of these people, it's the old big lie. You say something with enough frequency, people come to believe it. Actually, you don't need a lot of frequency anymore, because people will believe anything at all that makes Obama look bad. I don't know what that's going to mean by 2012, although I suspect it'll mean less than it means now. But for the 2010 elections, that could be a fairly serious occurrence. For anyone who didn't get the joke about Jimmy Carter blaming Ted Kennedy or the Israelis, he blamed Ted Kennedy for the failure of health care reform during Carter's administration. That's not entirely without merit, by the way. Kennedy admitted that on several occasions, not just during Carter's administration, but during Nixon's too, he had held out for a greater amount of health care reform, and they ended up getting nothing, and he said that he regretted that just before he died. By the way, for those of you who wish to join us in the conversation or perhaps contribute something new, the phone number at which you can do that is 347-994-3796. Repeating that number, 347-994-3796. Rick Penn will be joining us in about 10 minutes. You can join us in a three-way, more or less, conversation if you would care to join us after he and I get started. Or you can talk now while we have a few minutes before he does. Okay. Every week we try to bring you things from the website called News of the Weird. News of the Weird can be found at News of the Weird, one word, .blogspot.com. And you also find it in a great many local newspapers around the country. So we go to that website and we take a look and bring you now things that we think you may find interesting or not. Yom Kippur is a holiday in the Jewish religion during which those who strongly adhere to the religion don't eat. They take nothing by mouth for the 24-hour period from sunset when the holiday begins to sunset the next day. This, however, according to News of the Weird, and I'm sure it's true, presents a challenge to those people who are truly addicted to caffeine because they can't drink anything, they can't eat anything. So in Brooklyn, New York, they came up with something of a solution, and flying off the shelves were caffeine suppositories. So talk about your stimulus program. I'm telling you, you can take the stimulus, and let me tell you what you can do with it. Okay. Now, this next story that was also on that website, I'm not really sure is true, but this is astounding. Supposedly at the Mayo Clinic, it's not very funny, but it's peculiar, they cut a woman literally in half, except for one connective strand, removed her bone cancer, and then put her back together. And she's in a wheelchair, but otherwise fine. If this is true, it's both amazing and wonderful and scarier than hell, but, you know, that's just amazing if it's true. And in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Howard Veal, who has had 23 children by 14 women, is off to prison after falling $500,000 behind in child support. 23 children. Oh, my God. Okay. Did anybody ever tell these people that pregnancy is not just a disease that crops up? There is a connection between what you do and what occurs? All right. Now, this next story I put in the News of the Weird, but it's not from the website, newsoftheweird.com. This is from just regular news. You may remember that a week or two ago we told you about Ryanair, which is based in Ireland and flies throughout Europe. The chief executive of Ryanair, Mr. O'Leary, had suggested reducing pricing for passengers willing to stand up during a flight. He also thought of pay toilets on airplanes, which I think is a really interesting idea. But anyway, he also thought of creating a plane where all the seats are basically stand-up seats. You stand up against the seat and belt yourself in and stand during the flight rather than, well, anyway. And the reason for that was you could get more passengers onto each plane, you could charge less, still make more money, and, you know, that would be a terrific idea, supposedly. Anyway, not everybody thought this idea was crazy, apparently. In Russia the other day, six passengers were given an option after a plane was overbooked. The six passengers were given the option to either wait 7 hours for the next plane to the same location or to stand up on the airplane that was flying where they wanted to. Well, all of them chose to fly, well, or to stand. They stood while the plane flew. You understand, they were on the flight and standing up. And they did stand up until apparently there was some turbulence on the flight. They were pushed to the floor of the plane by the motion, and there were no seat belts, no oxygen, no life jackets, and now discussions regarding compensation are ongoing. So Mr. O'Leary apparently had an idea that's being adopted by at least one Russian airline. Can you imagine, under any circumstances, standing up? I mean, when I have flown, the only time I ever stood up is if I really, really, really had to use the facilities. And that, I think, only happened once. Every other time I've flown, I've stayed in the seat pretty much the entire time. I guess one long flight was different, but generally the flights I've taken, I guess, have been short. That's the reason. And I understand it's good to stand up and move about the cabin, as they say, in terms of your circulation and other health matters. But, frankly, I've always been too fearful to spend a lot of time out of my seat. Thankfully, I'm not flying in Russia. Wanted to talk about this day in history. You should say that whenever you do with very authoritarian type of, or authoritative, I should say, tone. This day in history. So here it is. Or in a moment, here it is. Let me remind you, if I may, that we'll be back here next week, 7:30 Mountain Time, 6:30 Pacific. And if anyone knows when the time changes for the rest of the country, I'd be pleased to know that. We do not change time here. So we're always on at 7:30 Mountain Standard Time, which is not the same as Mountain Daylight Time. And this gets real confusing real fast. So let me just say that during the summer period of the year, or Daylight Saving Time of the year, we are on at 6:30 Pacific. When that changes, we go to 7:30 Pacific, even though we don't change, and we don't change the time of the program. So assuming we're still on Daylight Saving Time next week, we will be on at 6:30 Pacific. But if you miss us then or have missed us before or would like to hear some past programs and really torture yourself, you can go to the same spot, probably, where you heard this, because I know that we are available in some other forums or fora, but you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman, and here are archive shows. And if you are listening to the show in archived form, you can listen to us live at the time I indicated earlier, probably 6:30 Pacific on Thursday evening. Now, all of that done, let's move ahead to this day in history. I'm sorry, this day in history. On this day in history, September 30th, actor James Dean, and we're talking about the one who was in East of Eden, not the one who was in Sausages, died in an auto crash. That date was September 30th, the year 1955. I always thought I had just been out of the loop when James Dean died. The truth of the matter is I was too young to have been aware of him or of the news when he died, so that was 1955. I wasn't a lot too young, but anyway, also on this date, the Berlin airlift ended. At that time, the Soviet Union had cut off food shipments in an attempt to show power against the West. Fortunately, Harry Truman had a better idea, which was once the Soviets had effectively blockaded Berlin, West Berlin, Truman ordered planes, military planes, to take food in and to drop them into Berlin, which is what occurred. And that airlift ended when effectively a blockade ended. That was on September 30th, and the date was 1949. Even more of a reason for me not to remember that. Also on this date, September 30th, riots took place in Mississippi over the subject of desegregation of that state university. That was also on September 30th, and the year was 1962. On this date, I will tell you the year, 1935, Johnny Mathis was born. And in another incident on this date, which we're not suggesting is related, the first volume of Little Women was published. The year of that was, are you ready? This surprised me. I didn't think it had been this far back. I'm going to ask our studio audience, what year do you think the first volume of Little Women came out? Okay, the guess was 1898, which is close, which was about the date I would have guessed. I would have guessed about 1900. But in fact, it was 1868, 3 years after the end of the Civil War. I'm frankly surprised at that. Also on this date, Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run for the season. And that year, I know, I can hear the yells coming in from the East Coast. the year was 1927. You're right. Okay, thank you. Also, something else happened in 1927 that was noteworthy. 1927 was a noteworthy year historically in the United States, and one would argue in Europe. Also in 1927, Charles Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic. And because it was 1927, it wasn't to meet with Hitler. But that was the year he did that, the same year that Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run. And in terms of this week, on yesterday's date was the birth date of Gene Autry. He was the singing cowboy and a one-time owner of the Los Angeles, which later became California Angels. If I'm right, it's now the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim or something. And I know we're going to be able to get that question answered by our guest when he comes on, which will be in about 40 seconds. Also on September 29th, Germany and Russia divided Poland between themselves, which Poland wasn't terribly happy about. The year was 1939. That, of course, was before the invasion, September 1st, which started World War. Oh, no, I beg your pardon. It was after the invasion by Germany, but it was to keep Russia out of the war. And that was, as I say, September 30th, 29th, I beg your pardon, 1939. I'm certainly glad we got that right. And joining us at this point is our guest, who has a cold, but is joining us anyway. Rick Penn, are you there?
Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm miserable, sick. But I'm here.
You are. That's what they... If Larry King were the host of the show, which is an extreme unlikelihood, he would say, "You're a trooper. You're a trooper. Thanks for joining us." Anyway,
well,
go ahead.
If you were Larry King, I wouldn't be calling in. So
that's right, and my pants would stop falling down because I'd have suspenders. But anyway, good to hear from you. Rick and I are friends for years, and he now lives in. Can I tell what state you live in, or is this are you in an undisclosed location?
You can tell the world it's Florida.
Okay, it's Florida, right. And he went there primarily to find the Fountain of Youth, which apparently he's done. And
that Jeff, if you can admit to living in Arizona, I can admit to living in Florida.
Okay, well, fair is fair, right? And anyway, last week we had a guest on. I don't know if you heard the show, Rick, but I doubt it because of the hour where you are. We had a guest on who's a nice lady and an author, and we'd had her on before, Sabella Jarello, and she is, I think she would acknowledge, being very conservative, and some of her views are very akin to, if not actually all the same as, the Tea Party movement. They call it a movement because of the other thing which we refer to as a movement being so similar. I'm of course referring to the Olympics, but anyway, it's the Olympic movement. I have that show
in my iPod. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Did you did the sparks fly?
No, not really. The nice thing about Sabella is she, I don't agree with her views almost at all, but she's very pleasant, and she will listen and talk, you know, and it's not, I don't think, adversarial. It was a little bit more so this time than last time, but not adversarial really, but just more contentious, I guess, a little bit, but not because either of us were being contentious, but both of us, you know, held our views fairly strongly.
I applaud you because as I age, I find myself less and less tolerant of that point of view. I just with the way things are going right now, I just don't have it in me to argue with the Tea Party set. It's just it almost seems pointless.
Yeah, no, it is, and it's not really a case of argument as much as exposure of views. The truth is, as you know, as everybody with any brains knows anymore, to sit there and argue politics is pointless because the reality is nobody convinces anybody else, and nobody convinces anybody who's listening. It's very rare that any human changes his or her mind. We just don't do that. We're not set up for that. I can, when it comes to politics, I can remember the last time I changed my mind on a political issue had to do with child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's a long time ago.
You used to be in favor of it, now you're against it?
No, the other way around. No. And thank you for the straight line. But the truth is I had, they were talking about, excuse me, trying to stop, you know, of course, child pornography from being on the Internet. My view was, you know what, it's awful. But, I mean, if someone charges for it, I can see, you know, that being illegal. But someone just putting it up on the Internet and making it available, I don't think should be limited. I think people should, of course, not look at it and so on. But since, you know, no one's selling, no one's profiting from the exploitation of a child, my view was, that should not be legally restricted. And then someone brought to my attention that the exploitation of the child was what was really illegal, or what should be illegal, and of course it is, but that the fact that someone is just getting some kind of peculiar thrill putting it up there rather than money shouldn't make any difference because they are either themselves the exploiter of a child or several children, or they had basically helped generate the exploitation of that child or the next one. And I saw the wisdom in that, and I came around to that view. But, you know, basically being a free speech advocate and free press advocate, I really hadn't seen that end of it until it was pointed out to me, and that's quite seriously, I mean, obviously I changed my mind. But it's rare that any of us do that ever.
Well, I think that people who self-identify as progressive and people who you and I would generally consider to be, you know, intelligent and well-versed and self-aware, I think that they do have a greater tendency to examine both sides of an issue. I know I've, you know, changed positions on a number of different things, gun control and capital punishment and a few other things over the years. I just find that this right-wing movement that we've been looking at lately, it's not a legitimate point of view. I mean, you're not going to convince someone that he wasn't born in Kenya. You know, it's silliness. When you're talking to someone who's serious, then you can have an exchange of ideas, and then you might have, a coming around, and maybe you don't entirely change your position, but you can at least have a reasonable debate about it. But that's not what you're seeing with this teabag movement.
No, and I'll tell you something else. A number of years ago, I had some correspondence with a fellow who wrote for a computer-based magazine in the Bay Area. His name was Jim Warren, and we carried on a correspondence for a short time and then, lost touch with each other. Bright guy and a self-identified progressive or liberal. And when we were corresponding, it was when these people were first really coming out of the woodwork. And I said at the time that I think that what we really need to do is say what used to be said about people who talk like that, which is they're nuts. Okay. But when we stop talking about people who are very different from ourselves, but who are really out there, and I'm not criticizing them, I'm just saying their views seem really outside the mainstream, even though the mainstream is now moving to the right, to some extent, maybe. But we describe those people as crazy, people who said they were against having Social Security, people who were against having unemployment, people who thought, in current times, think the president was born in Kenya or is a Muslim or whatever. They're obviously off their rocker. But now they're taken seriously.
And they're getting elected.
Yeah. Well, so, let's see. Have any? No, I'm not sure that's true. Who's been elected?
Well,
there have been
some primary winner out in Delaware.
Yeah.
And there have been right here in this state. The race among the three of them, Rubio, Meeks, and Charlie Crist. It looks like Rubio. The same vote is going to split between Meeks and Crist, and then the lunatics are going to elect Rubio. So you and I had a conversation about a year ago, right around when your show first started. And we both agreed. We said that this teabagger movement is a good thing because it's going to split the Republican Party. And what we didn't foresee is that not only would it split the Republican Party or draw from the Republican Party, but it would come to dominate it. And now I'm afraid that, the old saying, be careful what you wish for. I think some of these people are going to get elected, and we're going to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, I think you're right, although I may disagree with you on the magnitude. I think that the thing in Florida is a peculiarity. Not because of anything, but Crist's presence in the race, I think, is, while probably helping Rubio, if Crist weren't in the race, I don't think Meeks would win anyway. If Crist were to drop out tomorrow, I don't think that Meeks would beat Rubio. I think Rubio would still win. And one of the reasons, my perception, and I'm not there, but my perception from this distance is that Crist, when he became an independent, in addition to obviously chastising Rubio and fighting against Rubio, I think what he did is, to some degree, he moved to the left of where he had been as governor for a while. Not like he was ever an extreme conservative and then went and became an extreme liberal, but I think he moved a few notches to the left. Am I wrong?
I think the perception of him changed. I don't. You talk about particularly, and I think maybe it's my own bias, but I think particularly with Republican politicians these days, they adopted a strategy of let's oppose Obama, and come hell or high water, that's going to be our position. There's no substance, and I don't really exclude Crist from that category.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe he's not as as extreme as some of the others, but this move to the to become an independent, it was just for the expediency. And it was his only move. He knew he was going to lose that primary. So,
right.
I don't think he really changed. He just changed the label. So
mm-hmm.
There's really not a whole lot of substance there.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's ever been a whole lot of substance to Charlie Crist, period. But but certainly not in the change.
I'll tell you, I agree with you in that the enormity of this might not be, it may not be a landslide, but we're suffering the consequences of it because their influence in this rightward movement by the Republican Party. Look at what it's done to the Senate. Look at how things that they really should be able to agree on, ending
right.
tax breaks for companies that take jobs overseas.
Ship jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that should be should go down party lines. Should be filibustered by the Republicans, and that every single bill that hits the floor faces a filibuster. And that's not more of a story. I remember when the tables were turned and the Democrats were filibustering just judicial nominations, and that was the story of the day. And that was when we all heard about the term the nuclear option.
Right,
and
Bill Frist threatened it, yeah.
Right, and that the Democrats are destroying the Senate. And, nobody can play that game the way the Republicans can.
That's true.
Whether they're the party in power or they're out of power, they always seem to frame the conversation.
That's exactly right. They know how to create the message.
And it's going to get worse before it gets better, and then the practical effects of all of this is that good legislation doesn't get passed, and the recovery is significantly slowed because of it.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. The one thing I was going to say is that elections do affect how parties organize, and here's what I mean by that. You can go to two of the notable elections during my lifetime, besides 2008. But 2008, for all it did, was not a change in the sense of changing how a party decided to organize itself. But if you look at 1964 and 1972, in 1964, Barry Goldwater was the Republican nominee, okay? And he was considered by most people in the country, and even by many Republicans, to be something of an extremist. In fact, he made the speech about extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Okay. Then you have 1972, George McGovern, who I never considered and still don't consider extreme, but he was widely considered to be extreme on the left. And if you look what happened to the Republican Party after Goldwater, well, 4 years later, their nominee, who was victorious, was Richard Nixon, who, for all of his horribleness, was essentially a very moderate Republican.
And if that phrase were uttered today, extremism
in the defense of liberty is no vice.
In the defense of liberty is no vice. It would be applauded. And
it was applauded then by many people,
yes, but it was also part of the end of Barry Goldwater. There were
right.
It was the mainstream saw it as a real red light, as a real warning signal. Today,
no, you're exactly correct. Mm-hmm.
Today, that wouldn't even be considered an extreme state. It would be considered patriotic.
Yep, I agree.
By most, so it's,
well, by
it's,
I don't know about by most, part. But certainly by most in the Republican Party, which is what you're suggesting,
and by most of the people who are going to be voting in this election,
maybe. But going back to my series here, the 1972 election, in 1976, you can say a lot about Jimmy Carter, and I would join in that. But he was not exactly a great liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the thing that happens is that if the Republicans do relatively badly, at this election. Now, part of it is they're guaranteed to not do terribly badly because it's an off year in terms of presidential elections, and the party out of power, as everybody knows by now, traditionally does somewhat better in this off-year election. But if they don't do well by historical standards, there will be a letting out of the bubble. I'm looking for my metaphor in terms of their power within the Republican Party. If they don't do real well, then the Republicans will, although perhaps not consciously, will ultimately think, okay, that didn't work. Now what are we going to try to win the next election?
I think they're going to do well enough, and their spin will take care of the rest.
Possibly. And that could be a good thing, because if they do that, and then in 2012, they run a candidate like, please God, Sarah Palin, okay? That could
be
make
what you wish for.
Yeah, I know. But even if, heaven forbid, she were to win election to the presidency, everybody would say, "Gee, remember how smart George Bush was?" But anyway, but besides
ultimately, Dan Quayle is going to come off looking like a genius if this trend keeps up.
Yeah, really. So the thing is, and by the way, I don't think she stands a very good chance of getting the Republican nomination, according to all the polls that are taken at all these meetings. The guy who's in the lead, do you know who's in the lead among the Republicans?
Is it Mitt Romney?
Yeah. And the weird part is that he's in the lead within his party, yet most conservatives within the Republican Party don't like him a lot, and I can understand why. They don't trust him conservative based on history.
And then the evangelicals don't like him because of his religion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think Mitt Romney is the type who, as the campaign gets into full gear, it'll be like the last time. He'll lose the first couple of primaries and then fade away. I don't see him winning national office.
Tell me what you think of Glenn Beck's rally after you make the point you're about to make. Go ahead and make the point you were going to make first. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You sucked the thought right out. When you mentioned Glenn Beck, everything went blank. So
I
don't remember
why.
I don't remember what my point was going to be. What can you say about Glenn Beck? I mean, it's a circus. It's a little frightening. A lot of the people who came out and put Obama into office, a big part of this Democratic landslide that we saw, were people who were brought out to the polls for the first time. They were excited by the novelty of this kind of president that no one had ever seen before, and a lot of those people are just not going to show up at the polls.
That's correct.
This time around, the people who are going to show up, the people who are most energized. Now, I'm not talking about 2012. I'm talking about
the 2010. Right.
Yeah, and it's going to be this. It's going to be the Republican base. It's going to be the Tea Party activists, and it's. I don't want to believe it, but I think it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, I understand that thought, but I will tell you that the more recent, and I know you're probably aware of this, the more recent polling has demonstrated a real closing of gaps by Democrats, and while, as I said before, Republicans are likely to make gains, they're certainly not going to win both houses, and if they do take the House of Representatives, which I think is not certain, then that's all they'll take. And it's I don't think going to be nearly as bad as it would have been had the election been held a month and a half ago, which would have been a disaster if you're a Democrat, a progressive, or want to get anything done. By the way, I when I was saying before people are nuts and so forth, I believe that in terms of a lot of extremist views. But what I don't believe is that everybody who disagrees with me is necessarily unintelligent. necessarily.
Well, that's why I say I'm becoming less and less tolerant, because I find it harder and harder to accept that anyone who can fall into that camp really has a the light is on in the forest. It's just I just don't see it anymore.
Let me give you some illustrations about people who disagree with you, who are not necessarily unintelligent. You believe, I think, as I do, that there should not be too much restriction on the ownership of guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you believe that everybody who believes that guns should be severely limited is necessarily unintelligent?
No, of course not. I'm not talking about some of these
issues.
I'm not talking about issues per se. I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about the economy. I'm talking about some of the nonsense that
mm-hmm.
we've mentioned about Obama, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're always, I agree with that. We're always
going
to be able to debate on these issues and to what extent we should have gun control and a lot of these different issues of the day. But the
mm-hmm.
the big picture, I mean, when to fall into that camp and to completely ignore the damage that the Republican Party has done since 1980, really, this
mm-hmm.
whole supply side economic theory that they came up
mm-hmm.
with, the tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts that they're debating now. I mean, anybody who can look at that and look at it logically and really evaluate it, they know the damage that it did. So they're either
mm-hmm.
they're either lying or they just really don't get it. You know my theory that politics, people think about politics with the same part of their brain as they think about sports. And I'm a Republican for the same reason that I'm a Cubs fan. That's my team. They may not say that consciously, but I think
right.
it's the same thought process. That's why
they're actually Cubs fans?
Yeah. That's why when a politician changes parties, why do you think Charlie Crist's views didn't change? He went from Republican to independent. He changed his team.
Mm-hmm.
So why would somebody who was a big fan of Charlie Crist now hate Charlie Crist? His views didn't change. His team changed. He changed uniforms. So I think it's a silly way to look at politics.
Sure.
And I think that most on the right do see it that way. So, like I say, it's just, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I've become less and less tolerant of that point of view. So,
yeah, I understand. Let me give out the phone number again in case anybody would wish to join us. And there is a possibility someone may join us who doesn't agree with us. That would be okay, too. 347-994-3796. Otherwise, we'll enjoy ourselves anyway. But if you want to join us, feel free to do that. The thing you were saying about, people who fall into that, there's another factor, too. People really don't remember history. They really don't. I have had a conversation with a guy who's a friend of mine who is a very, very conservative guy. And he said something about, Reagan lowered the taxes and business did well and the country did well. Well, that's not quite accurate for a variety of reasons. And also, Reagan raised taxes too, or more correctly, taxes went up and down both when Reagan was president.
Mm-hmm.
To say a president raises taxes is idiotic, because of course Congress has to do that and the president has to approve it. By the way, the other thing that I find fascinating is how many people think that Obama has raised taxes or the taxes have gone up during the Obama. I'm serious.
During this administration.
Okay, I'm not sure that's accurate. What do you mean by taxes have gone down?
In certain tax brackets, taxes have actually decreased, not increased.
Well, if that's true, and I don't doubt you, I'm not aware of it. My understanding is that nothing has happened in terms of legislation that affects tax rates so far. Something is going to happen if they don't pass the legislation in the lame duck session, that the effect will be everybody's taxes will go up because the Bush tax cuts will end.
It's so hard to evaluate this sort of thing because people talk about tax cuts and a raise in taxes or lowering your taxes, and yet people don't take into consideration when you get, for example, when you have these cuts in federal taxes, the local municipalities and states, they have to get revenue from somewhere, so it's going to come from one pocket into the other pocket. So
that's exactly right.
If you do experience a tax cut, you know, on this side, you're going to see
you may get an increase on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
or
at
the very
that,
to cut services.
Yeah, that does not cut evenly necessarily because a lot of it depends on one's individual circumstances. But yes, you're generally right. There's no free ride. That basically is just the way it is. But what I'm saying is there has been nothing that Obama has done or that the Congress has done that has raised anybody's taxes. But it's kind of like, as you know, we've had Larry Hancock on a number of times talking about assassinations, and I know I've mentioned it to him. There are lots and lots of people who believe they saw Bobby Kennedy getting shot on television, and they never did.
They never did.
It happened when
you
there were no cameras there.
You say people don't remember history. People don't remember 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they don't remember what took place 2 or 3 years ago, they're certainly not going to remember what took place 25 or 50 years ago.
No, that's absolutely true. But, you know, but the other factor here is that they remember it as they want to remember it in many cases, and that's the problem. That, you know, that's why they say, well, Reagan was a great president, he lowered taxes and business did well. No, that's not how it worked. And I'll tell you something else. The fact is that people don't – one of the problems that Democrats have is that there are very few simple answers in terms of explaining processes. You have to go through kind of a nuanced explanation. And when you do that, the people who are not as fully capable of understanding nuance say, that's nonsense. And by the way, one of the things, if you do listen to last week's show, and this is not a criticism of Sabella, but if you listen to last week's show, there she was talking about how she's against cap and trade. One of the big things is that all these conservatives are against cap and trade. And one of the things that I find really interesting is to ask someone, what is cap and trade as you understand it? Most people don't have any clue. They think it has to do with increasing taxes. It has nothing to do directly.
And if they don't understand it, they won't say, you know, I'm not really sure I understand it. They'll just repeat what the party line is. By the way, that go to Colorado, if you're at, I assume you're at your computer.
Yes.
What I was quoting was a columnist for Forbes, Bruce Bartlett.
Yeah.
He worked with Bush and in the Reagan administration. And in March, he wrote a column, federal taxes are considerably lower by every measure since Obama became president. It ties into the stimulus bill.
Right. Okay.
It reduced federal taxes by about $100 billion in 2009 and possibly another $222 billion this year. So, again, it's a question of how you measure it. But your point is taken that there's no real thought behind a lot of these opinions that you're hearing spouted by that particular sect. It's just
group.
I think of them as a sect. It's frustrating. So when you tell me that you had a show with the lady that you had last week, I don't know if I would have been able to show your patience.
Well, my patients were sitting in the waiting room, so it was all right. No, I understand that. Frankly, I find that easy. It's not a matter, you know, I don't find my yelling at someone or trying to speak over someone is particularly helpful to me, let alone anybody else.
I would have just hung up.
I'm sorry?
I said I would have just hung up.
Yeah, I understand, but it's a little bit more difficult to do when you're hosting the show. Of course, I could have cut her off on the switchboard, but there was no real, I didn't want to do that either. There was a question I was going to ask you, which has now gone out of my mind, but I've gone out of my mind many times before. So what do you think the possibility is in terms of the 2012 election? Do you have any idea at all in or opinion? I mean, this is all speculation on who you think the Republican candidate will be. We talked about Mitt Romney and Sarah. Any thoughts?
I don't think it's a name that we've heard yet, or that I don't think it's a name that's common yet. I think they're going to find someone from the they're going to find another governor somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly possible. There is, however, you know, a trend historically in the Republican Party, which would favor Sarah Palin. What do they call it? Primogeniture, where, you know, it's like the next logical son becomes the candidate. So, for example, not in 1964, but going back to the 60s, in 68, Nixon became the presidential candidate for the Republicans. By the way, we've got about 4 minutes left, became the Republican candidate in part because he had run before, he hadn't been around for a while, but he was there and he was prominent, and he wasn't Nelson Rockefeller, who was the other theoretical possibility. And then I'm trying to think who went after him in, you know, Ford and Reagan all had been around for a while, and it seems in retrospect like it was a logical successionary process. Bush being a little different.
Are you predicting Palin's going to...
Well, I don't know about a prediction, but I'd say that I wouldn't be enormously surprised. I think, to tell you the truth, she strikes me as being as smart as a rock. I don't mean E-Rock. I mean a rock. She's about as smart as a rock. But I think some of the people around her are very bright in terms of positioning her. There's a joke here somewhere, but anyway, in terms of positioning her for a run for the nomination, I don't think she can beat Obama, but I think she can do a lot in terms of getting a lot of attention. And I know what I was going to say before, and you may disagree, but I think Barack Obama is such a good campaigner even now. I mean, if you heard the speech he made in Wisconsin and one he made in Cleveland a few days ago, it's terrific. The problem with the midterm elections is they're not showing him a lot. If they showed him more, I think the Democrats would, and they may, I think the Democrats would stand an even better chance. But in 2010, the Democrats may take a bath or a relative bath, but I think in 2012, no matter what happens, assuming he's running again, pardon me, I think he's going to win it pretty substantially.
I think he's done, it's almost as though he's done, paid so much attention and done such a good job being president that he hasn't paid enough attention to being a politician and being a campaigner.
That's right.
And then hopefully when the next election rolls around, that will kick into gear as well. It's sad that it has to be that way. You would like to see him just simply be the president and lead the country. Unfortunately, it's just not set up that way. Hey, I know you have to wrap it up, but there was one thing that I wanted to make sure that I got in before your show ended. Arthur Penn, Tony Curtis, and Eddie Fisher.
This is on the subject of three people dying at a time. We have about 90 seconds. Okay. No, they always happen in fours. I'm telling you, somebody else is going to die.
It's just another opportunity for me to say I told you so.
I forgot about Eddie Fisher having died recently, or I would have mentioned him. Eddie Fisher and Tony Curtis, and besides their relatively close ages and the time in which they became well-known, there's got to be some connection with some woman they both had a relationship with. Anyway, we're essentially out of time. Rick, thanks so much. It was a pleasure. I hope you're feeling better.
Much better. Thank you, Jeff. It was a pleasure being back on your show.
It's a cure. We'll do this again, and I'll talk to you soon. And so that was Rick Penn. I hope you enjoyed him as much as I did. I don't know if I can say I enjoyed you, but I had a great time. Talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
And for those of you who are with us, and I assume that's everybody who started with us, thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, pardon me, just don't ask your mother's sister to help you move a rubber tree, because everyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant. With that in mind, I will let you go, and I apologize, and we'll see you next week. In the meantime, be well. Care. Bye-bye.